This is an Enterprise Times podcast. My name is Ian Murphy. I'm here at the Atlassian Summit with Jens Schumacher.
Hi, Ian. My name is Jens Schumacher, and I'm the head of the software teams business at Atlassian. That means I look after all the products that we build for software development teams. Think about Jira Software, Jira Portfolio, Bitbucket, SourceTree, those types of products.
We've heard a lot of interesting announcements this morning. Perhaps the one that's got everybody talking is the incident management and the acquisition of Opsgenie.
Yeah, we're really excited about it.
Incident management, complicated field. Companies have all sorts of processes for different types of incident. But IT is often overlooked when it comes to just a bug in the code being dealt with internally. Yet they've invested a lot in service desks. Why do you think the acquisition of Opsgenie will help change people's approach?
When we look at the incident management process, we looked at how we've been dealing with incidents ourselves over the last few years. There's a big push to SREs and in general, like process changes, how you deal as a software company with major incidents. And one thing that was pretty apparent was the number of different tools and point products that are currently used to manage a single incident. Talked about Opsgenie for alerting, their status page for communicating with your customers, their service desk to get the customer requests in, all these different point solutions that people have to work with during that incident. And like, incident is a stressful time, so we looked for a way, how do we bring all those tools together, create a process that is more transparent and easier to follow for the individual, make it so that the responders can focus on resolving the incident and finding the root cause rather than dealing with the process itself.
A lot of companies will have rolled their own. They'll have started to write the integration as vendors have upgraded and used more open APIs. That means they've got a lot of information, a lot of data locked up in those point solutions. How do you extract that out? Because they don't want to start from here and go forward. They want that historical, because that often, for products they've had for a while, contains a lot of important information.
To start with, there are a lot of companies who don't do any major incident management right now. Or they have a very simple set of tools. Maybe they just do it in Slack. They just do the collaboration piece. They might have the alerting piece. But we find that a lot of teams don't have a mature process, especially in the DevOps world. With the software team and the ops team becoming closer together, it becomes more important to define a process around this. And this is what we want to help with. We want to help those teams to get started. The next step is then to look at the more mature teams that already have an incident management process in place and see how we integrate with the tools that they currently use or get the data across into Jira Ops. That's the next step that we're looking into.
I'm intrigued at your comment that a lot of DevOps teams don't have incident management. After all, one of the key selling points of DevOps is we can take an incident and resolve quickly. And we see that when we look at mobile apps on devices. You get a mobile app, people start reporting a problem. Within a week, you've got another version of it pushed. What is it that teams are missing then in their ability to take that bug report and fix it compared to an incident management solution?
There's a difference between the bug report and an actual incident. The bug report is something that you mentioned has a week in order to be resolved. It's fine for that to happen. But if you look at a major incident, and I think we talked about YouTube TV as an example that went down during the World Cup, you don't want that service to be down for an hour when England is playing. Or if you are Delta Airlines and you had this outage like they had in 2016, where I think the outage lasted 10 hours, grounded 1,800 flights, cost the company millions of dollars. Those incidents, they have to be resolved within minutes or hours at worst. And it's much more urgent and much more important to resolve that quickly and get to the root cause.
But for companies like that, you'd expect them to already have some form of solution. Where has this gap grown from?
You would think so, but we just talked to a lot of companies and looked at ourselves as well. We basically did what we now productized. We took those point solutions and stringed them together with some glue in between, and we had a 6-page document that outlines the process that you have to follow when you want to resolve a major incident, who you notify, what tools to use. That was complicated, and we saw a lot of mistakes happening in our own way we handled incident management, so we thought there must be a better way. And then how do we productize the best practices that we have developed over the last 5 years and share it with our customers in the product?
How do you then begin to scale up? You talked about a major incident. A security incident is a very good example of this. I might be issued with a notification from another company saying, look, we found a major security hole in your solution. We're going to raise a CVE. So now immediately I've got to integrate with the CVE system if I'm going to have an integrated solution. I've got to integrate with those people so that they know what's going on. I've got to bring all my product teams together. I've got to share data, and I've got to share data openly to get this fixed quickly. But I've also got to include management. And they're not always the quickest to get onto a collaboration with developers. How do you make people get involved? How do you write the correct collaborations to get people involved?
This comes back to the more fundamental strength of Jira itself. So for Jira, the way Scott talked about it today at Summit is we're looking with Jira to become the center of your work. If you think about a Jira ticket as the unit of work and then everything else that is related to the work connected to that ticket, that's what we can provide for not just the software development, but also the incident management. If the security incident happens, you want to know everything that is related to that security incident, like who was alerted to it, what stakeholder communication has happened already, how do you send it out as well? And this is basically what we do with the Jira ticket. We string that all together so the management team can go to the ticket itself if they want to, but you can also notify them via status page and internal communications, which is what status page provides. This is what we use internally when there's a security incident. Depends on the severity. The management or executive team gets notified and they get updates every hour, every 2 hours, depending on the urgency of the incident. That happens via email because, as you mentioned, it's like hard to get people into a collaboration tool necessarily, especially if they're executives, then that can happen in all kinds of different channels.
Walking to most large companies and talk about incident response, and the first thing they think about is a security breach. And this can be business threatening for them. $300 and something million for Experian is a good example. How do you hook to those processes? What mechanism do you have to import processes that companies have created that say, when this happens, involve these people. When that happens, bring in that agency or use that third party.
This is the value that Ops Genie brings in. Essentially, the product allows you to define services, define rosters and schedules, and allocate people for specific services. With Ops Genie, then you can define who should be notified when a certain type of incident happens, whether it's a security incident or like a downtime on a specific service that you run, and then automatically it notifies the right people. A lot of companies actually use Ops Genie today for security incidents or any other types of incidents in order to make sure that the right people get contacted at the right time.
How do you get your big customers to take the processes they have and implement their processes here? Because there's a big gap between having a process and implementing a solution.
We got to look into this, how we evolve and work with our customers to see what processes they have in place. It's still early on. We just released the product today. Our focus has been on the teams, 50, 100, up to 500 people, some who don't have processes in place at all, some who have processes in place and use all the different point solutions and help them to connect those different point solutions. That's the primary focus right now. And then we have to evolve and see how we scale incident management for the larger companies who have more mature processes and see how we integrate with the tools they use today.
Among the other announcements today were some very interesting cloud announcements. For example, the increase from 2,000 to 5,000 users inside the cloud instances for your larger customers. In fact, for yourselves at 2,500 people now. How much has that been a stumbling block for some of your customers in adopting cloud and staying with server?
The limit itself has been a big hurdle for customers, and that's why we made that step to increase it to 5,000 users. I talked to a number of different customers yesterday, and they were quite excited there was an announcement coming. In terms of the hurdles, like the limit is one hurdle. The other hurdles that we heard over and over again is the customization and the apps that people use today. So we've been doing a lot of work in the last few years to work with all the major vendors to ensure that we have extension points in a cloud product that enable them to build the same products or the same capabilities in cloud as they can build in servers. I think it's important to understand that the architecture of our ecosystem or the plugin ecosystem is quite different in the server world than in the cloud world. In the server world, an add-on or an app has access to all the APIs, deep APIs in the application. But for security reasons, where you share resources with other customers in the cloud, you can't provide the same access to the API because in worst case, the server goes down. That's okay when you have a single customer on a single server and they control the apps that they install. It's not good when you have a cloud solution that has hundreds of thousands, millions of users. We have a quite different plugin system on the cloud that's called Connect.
That separation of architecture came a few years ago for yourselves, and it's something that a lot of people out there are struggling with. If I talk to companies now about moving to cloud, there's still the assumption that they can wrap it into some form of virtual machine and just throw it to the cloud. Companies then try and tune it for cloud. You've been through that phase, and that still led you down the line of splitting into two code bases. How big a lesson was that for you, and how do you approach that when you talk to customers?
In fact, we're sharing a lot of the, from the split knot, we had some blog posts that talked about the split and shared some of the technical challenges we had along the way. I haven't seen a lot of customers who actually have made that move. It's quite a bold move to take software that was written for the server world and move it into the cloud and then change the architecture. It was a massive project for us. We spent a year, 1.5 years working on that and changing the infrastructure, make it performant in the cloud, and learned a lot along the way. But it was an important decision because we just found that taking the same architecture that works in the server world and then applying it to cloud simply doesn't scale when you go to millions of users.
The other side of this is data. Customers will have database structures that exist locally. Those structures may not map well to the new tool in the cloud. More importantly, the links and all the other components that are there may not be there once they go to the cloud version. They're also used to customization on server, and with cloud, because it's a commodity, it's more about configuration. If I start with the data, can you give us a view on how customers are migrating data, what the challenges are that they see?
I haven't been involved too much on how customers do it, but we're providing now a number of tools to help our customers migrating their data. We already had ways to export data from one instance into the other, and we made those tools a bit more sophisticated to work with the cloud products as well. That's what we released today. All the tools that we used for our own migration that happened over the last 6 months, all our internal tools that we used were moved from a data center instance to a cloud instance, and those tools we make available now. The interesting part, and that's something that people might not realize, but our own instance is unbelievably big because it's probably the oldest Jira instance out there in the world. It's like since day one of Jira, that's the same instance that we've been using, the same for Confluence. Since I started Atlassian 14 years ago, you can still find the same blog posts that I've written 14 years ago in the Confluence instance. All the pictures, all the specs and pages, requirements, everything is still there. That instance is humongous, and of course the level of customization with a lot of developers at Atlassian happy to build their own customization and run them, that was a big challenge for us as well. Quite frankly, for some customizations, we would just have to say we don't support it anymore. Mm-hmm. And that's a trade-off that you have to make. But then you obviously win on other areas like the editor, or a lot of the features that we can provide now in the cloud have other benefits, and sometimes they outweigh the level of customizations or some of the customizations that you made in the past.
Scott in the press conference earlier was talking about 500 million entries sitting inside some of the tools. But also earlier you announced an archiving option. Are you going to suggest to customers that they consider archiving before moving data to the cloud? Because that would certainly reduce the data set and make it easier for them to choose what goes and what stays.
That's definitely a viable solution to think about when you're moving houses. The last time I moved house, I probably left half the things that I didn't need anymore. Look at the clothes that I didn't need, the furniture that was a little bit older and from IKEA maybe need an upgrade. You left them behind. And I think you should think about the same way when you move from your server or data center instance to the cloud. Take a look at what are the things that you don't need anymore and leave them behind as well. The archiving is a good way to do that. The good thing is you don't lose that data. You can, unlike my clothes are gone now, so I don't have access to them anymore. But with the data that you archive, you can maintain your server instance as well. Just get a server instance. There's, if you don't need it maintained or new updates, comes at no cost. Because it's a perpetual license, and then you continue to have access to that data that you archived on your server instance forever if you want to maintain that.
Configuration versus customization. One of the routes to cloud you said to people is we're going to take your server, we'll help you through a hybrid process, and then into a fully cloud environment. Part of the problem people have is when they have the product on premises, they customize it heavily. When they get to cloud, because it's multi-tenancy, they can't do that customization you mentioned as much when you talked about the challenge of apps. How are customers beginning to adapt their installation, their configuration processes, now they can no longer heavily customize?
There's still ways to automate certain processes, whether it's installation or automation of generating user accounts or other things. There's still comprehensive APIs in the cloud product as well. What you can't do is customize the interface in any way you want or hook into deep APIs. That goes away. On the other hand, you saw it in Jira today, we offer ways to make it easier for users to customize and to change your project. So we're moving a lot of that power that requires an administrator, and an administrator with superpowers is what we call it. And we're moving that power to the project administrators and the teams. And that's been one of the major requests that we had over the last 10, 15 years. That's the number one issue I heard from administrators, where they say, I don't want to be bothered with every single time somebody needs a project or a new workflow or a custom field, to also the users who are like, oh, I have to follow this workflow that doesn't really fit my team. I can't change it. Or they don't understand why something is a certain way, why the issue has 15 fields that they don't need. We're creating a balance there where the teams get more freedom and the administrators can take care of more important issues than just serving their users and with like tasks that should really be automated or just the responsibility of the users themselves.
How much of a challenge has it been for yourself in adapting your software to give that additional flexibility? Because again, you come from a world where you provided people with a server product. They could then customize. Now you have to write it in such a way that they're configuring. That's a massive change in the way you program. It's a massive change in the way that you think about the architecture of the actual software. Has that been significantly challenging? Are you comfortable you've now got it baked down right?
Like, I'm not going to paint a pretty picture. It's probably the hardest thing that I've worked on at Atlassian. I don't think it's because of the architecture. The architecture is certainly also something that we need to consider, and we have to make sure that it scales, because if every team can now create their own workflow, their own custom fields, that could have a performance impact if we don't watch out for that. So it's something that we're very much aware of. I think the biggest challenge for us is to get the balance between simplicity and power, which is what Jira is famous for. This is why people love Jira, the flexibility, the customizability. We want to preserve that, but at the same time, for users who just have a team of 5 or 10 people, they don't need all that flexibility. They just want a tool to get started quickly. We call that project internally Simply Powerful, which is a tagline that Apple actually used for their last, I think, OS release. I like to think that they stole it from us. That's basically what it is, provides the teams with simplicity to get started and enable them to gradually scale into the power and the flexibility that Jira enables and adapt their process. And along the way, we always encourage people to keep the process as simple as possible, because the more process you add, the more complex your process gets, the harder it is to explain it to people and to change it later on as well.
If I look at other industries, ERP is a good example. We have a lot of companies who have customers out there with server-based products, and they're struggling to move them to the cloud. Some of them have set deadlines. SAP, for example, has said, you will go cloud. We're not going to change our mind on this. What sort of timescale do you think it's going to take to move all your customers from their server and data center instances into cloud?
We don't know what the time frame is. If you asked me 5 years ago or 6 years ago, I would have said 3 years. Obviously, it has taken a little bit longer than I thought at the time. But at the moment, we talk about 5, 10, 20 years. We still believe that some of our customers, especially larger customers, are still going to have data center instances 5, maybe even 10 years from now. And we want to support that as well. So for us, it's not about pushing people to the cloud. For us, it's about making the cloud product so desirable and amazing that people just want to go to the cloud. There's a lot of benefit that we can provide in the cloud, especially if you use multiple Atlassian products. Something that was always hard for us in the server world is the shared user management. Now we have Atlassian Crowd, which helps a little bit with it, but in the cloud, just putting the different products together, the way we can integrate them, the way we can share components and services that are being reused. We shared the editor today, which is a great example. People have complained for years that the wiki markup in Confluence is different to the markup in Jira, which is different to the markup in Bitbucket. Now we're unifying that all with a single editor that one of the cloud teams works on, and that editor then makes it into Bitbucket, into Jira, and into Confluence, and you can use the same markup. You can, in fact, reference images or attachments that you uploaded in Confluence in a Jira ticket really easily to see what are your latest ones. There are a lot of capabilities, because we have shared infrastructure and shared services, that we can offer in a cloud that are really hard to provide in the server world. We think that's going to be a big incentive for people to move.
It was interesting to note the number of new features this year compared to last year and the year before. You've got a very busy year ahead of you. Thank you for your time today, Jens.
Thank you.